Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and the title of this program today is Fit and Trim for Life, which is what we all want to be. As a rich person once said, you can never be too rich or too thin, and our job is to be fit and trim for life. So I want to welcome you and thank you very much for being with us today. In the next hour, I'm going to give you a series of proven practical methods and strategies to lose weight, get fit, increase your energy levels, sleep better, feel great, and be more attractive to others, especially of the opposite sex, in your personal and business life. Interesting, the fitter and trimmer you are, the more credible you are to other people, the more they believe you and believe in you, and the more they want to be around you, associate with you, and do business with you. They found that fit and trim salespeople sell vastly more than people who aren't. So there's all kinds of payoffs, aside from the fact that you feel wonderful. Well, now, the best news today is that your health and longevity is under your control. For many, many years, for almost all the years of human history, if a person lived a long life, they'd say, boy, that person sure is lucky. Today, you actually control your own longevity. Your health habits, the way that you eat, sleep, drink, and the things we talk about today, have more of an impact on how long you live than any other factor. You can actually make a decision to live a long, healthy, happy life, and then you can fulfill that decision. You can live longer today and better today than any other time in history. This is the most wonderful thing. Imagine that. We can live to be 80 or 90 or 100 years old today by choice and not by chance. I often say to my audiences, your goal should be to live a long, healthy life, to dance at your grandchildren's weddings, and to be killed by a jealous spouse diving out a window at the age of 93. My goal is to show you how to get there. So let's begin. Now, the average lifespan in the Western world in 1900 was 48 years. The average lifespan in 1935, when they brought in the Social Security system, was 62 years. The reason they set the age at 65 is because they never thought they would ever have to pay out. Today, the average lifespan is 76 years for men, but 80 years for women, and it's going up by 1 or 2 years every 5 or 10 years. What this means is that's the average. Because you are better educated and smarter, you're going to beat the averages, which means everybody who's listening today is probably going to live to be 85 or 90 or 95 years old. And here's the other thing, is you're not going to be sitting in a wheelchair drooling with a blanket over your lap. You're going to be bright and alert and active and smart and traveling. I mean, you are going to be at your very best in your later years simply because of the great improvements in nutrition and educational technology. When you reach 65 years old, you'll be in your prime, not ready for retirement. I did a talk last week with Jack Welch at a big international conference with 40,000 people hooked up by satellite. And Jack Welch, at the age of 65, at the top of his game, the top executive in the world, was forced to retire by General Electric's retirement policies of 65 years, which had been set almost 100 years ago. And the interesting thing is that here's Jack, never smarter, never brighter, never more capable of contributing greater value to a company, forced out by what is an antiquated or basically obsolete retirement age. The fact is today that the retirement age is really 75, not 65. All Western countries are going to have to adapt to this new reality because there's not enough money in any of our Social Security systems to pay people to retire at 60 or 65 and live for another 25 years. It's just not going to work. So most people today are already planning, according to the statistics, to work until they're 75 years old. And the reason that you'll want to work is not because you have to, although that's going to be a problem for some people, it's because you'll want to. You'll want to be active, you'll want to be busy, you'll want to be using your skills and your intelligence and your background, you'll want to be involved with other people, you'll want the extra revenue, you want to be a player. So you're going to live a long, long time, and you're going to live better throughout this time. Well, when you reach 65, you're going to be at your very best, and our job is to help you get there. Now, there are three keys to becoming and remaining fit and trim for life. And here they are. Number one, turning point in my life as a young man, is accept 100% responsibility for yourself and for your health habits. You say, if it's to be, it's up to me. That means no excuses and no blaming. There is a common illness in Western society called excusitis, which is an inflammation of the excuse-making gland. And what happens when people catch this, instead of making progress, they just make excuses for not making progress. Mark Twain once said that there are 1,000 excuses for failure, but never a good reason. So don't make any excuses. Don't blame anything on your genes or anything else's. someone once said, you know, I'm overweight because I have a problem with my glands. And the doctor said, yes, it's your mouth gland, and it's malfunctioning 5 times a day. So we have to accept complete responsibility for our health. Now, the second part of being fit and trim for life is to set clear, written, measurable goals for each part of your health and physical life. I cannot tell you how important this is that you're very specific about what you want. You wouldn't go out shopping to a grocery store without a grocery list. You wouldn't go for a drive without a map. You wouldn't try to accomplish anything without a goal and a plan. And the interesting thing is that setting a goal and a plan for your life increases the likelihood that you'll achieve it by 10 times. So if you decide that these are the number of calories I'm going to eat, and then you track your calories, you're going to be much closer to your target than if you don't keep track of them. If you decide this is the amount of exercise I'm going to do, if you decide this is the amount I'm going to weigh, if you decide these are the number of hours I'm going to sleep, the very act of setting goals and making plans for them makes a distinct difference. So decide how much you're going to weigh and by when. Determine how much you're going to exercise and on what days are you going to exercise. Determine how much you're going to sleep. Determine how many days you're going to take off and how many days on vacation you'll take. Especially, and this is really important, decide how long you're going to live. Sometimes in my seminars I ask people, I say, has anybody here set a goal for how long they're going to live? And, of course, people are uncomfortable. They say, oh, yeah, we'll live to be 100, 110, and so on. So I say, all right, let's say you're going to be lived to be 90 or 100. Then let me ask you this question. Are your current health habits going to get you there? Are your current health habits going to get you there? And they all become a little bit uneasy because they know they're not. So here's a great question. Imagine that you're going to live to be 95. Set that as a goal, okay? You live to be 95. And on your 95th birthday, you're going to drop dead. You pass away in your sleep. So here's the question. How do you want to feel the day before? How fit do you want to be? How healthy do you want to be? How do you want to feel the day before that and the day before that? And your answer is, well, the day before I die, I want to feel great. I want to just pass away in my sleep. So we have to start working all the way back to the present day. And the question is, when would be a good time to start feeling really great, physically fit and healthy? And the answer, of course, is, well, you know, now is probably a good time. Because if you want to get to that date a long time away, you've got to get to the level of health and fitness that will assure that today. Now, the third key, I said the first key is to accept responsibility. Second key is to set goals. The third key is to feed your mind. When I was 21 years old, I stumbled across a book by Gaylord Houser on vitamins. I'd never read anything on health and nutrition in my entire life. And I still remember reading this book like a child in a toy store. I was just amazed at the research that had been done in vitamins and minerals, nutritional supplements, and so on. It changed my whole life. I was never the same again in terms of health and fitness. So one of the things you need to do is read, study, learn, and apply good ideas and methods for healthy living. Read magazines that are designed just for healthy living. Read books on nutrition. Read books on food supplements and additives. The things that are in these books and the research that has been done will absolutely astound you. For almost every single type of food or food supplement, there's 10, 20, 30 independent university blind studies that have been done that will tell you exactly whether or not these are helpful to you. Sometimes you can just come across one idea on nutrition that you hadn't thought about that will transform the way you think and feel about yourself. So just like you read the newspaper for news and, you know, you read in business books for your business, on a regular basis, feed your mind with information on health, nutrition, exercise, and some of the new breakthroughs. I remember once I had a friend who was quite ill, and I had read an article in a journal from another country on a new medication that had been approved by the FDA for exactly this illness. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, there's really not very much we can do. You know, we'll give you painkillers, and I just hope it goes away. And he came back, and he said, this is what the doctor said. I said, will you go back to the doctor with this article? And he went back to the doctor with the article, and the doctor was shocked. He didn't even know this drug existed. He'd made a couple of quick phone calls, prescribed this drug for my friend, and surprise, surprise, my friend got better almost overnight. So there's an awful lot of ignorance out there, and you can't rely on professionals to do it for you. You have to accept responsibility for yourself. Now, I've studied this subject for 30, 40 years, and I've come to the conclusion that there are 7 keys to becoming fit, trim, and healthy for life. And so let's talk about these 7 keys in order. Key number 1 is proper diet, which means, of course, eating the right foods. Now, the reason we start off with proper diet is because you have to look at your body like a chemical factory, and you have to realize that all foods are chemicals, and chemicals are like drugs. In other words, they have an impact on you. If you were to take a slug of whiskey, you know that slug of whiskey would instantly have an impact on your body. Your face would flush. You'd feel it in your stomach. You feel it in your arms, your brain. When you take any kind of a food, it has certain ingredients that make it equal to a drug of some kind. So every food you take in has an effect. It has chemicals. It has vitamins, minerals, or none. It has good nutrients. It has zero nutrients. But everything you take in has a chemical effect on your body. So I want to ask you a question. Imagine that you had become fabulously wealthy, as many of you are going to, and as a result, you had given in to your great fantasy, which was to buy a racehorse. And you now had this beautiful racehorse, pay $1 million for this racehorse, a fabulous racehorse. And this racehorse was just your pride and joy. It was the pinnacle of your success. So here's my question. What would you feed that racehorse? Would you feed the racehorse the same kind of foods you eat? Would you feed the racehorse potato chips and Cokes and candy and bagels and donuts and cake? Would you feed the racehorse peanuts and chocolate bars and things like that? You'd say, absolutely not. If you found your trainer giving your racehorse one of those things, you'd fire that person so fast. So here's my point. How much more valuable are you? If I were to ask you, would you cut off your finger for $1 million? You'd say, no, absolutely not. Your little finger's worth more than $1 million. You are worth vastly more than any racehorse, so why on earth would you put into your body foods that you wouldn't feed an animal? And that's a real good question to think about. My daughter, bless her soul, Catherine, she's 12, she has two horses now. I didn't even want her to have one. Now she's got two horses. And those horses have a very carefully prescribed diet. The exact nutrients, the exact quantities, the exact process of teaching, they're very carefully checked by vets on a regular basis. They are exercised and stretched every single day so that they're functioning at their best. And these horses cost a few $1,000s, but we treat them very, very carefully. And if we found that they weren't being given the best of foods and the best of exercise and the best of rest and the best of stable conditions, well, you know, we'd be very upset. So how much more valuable are you than a horse? Now, here's an interesting thing. There are three major sources of energy. And when I talk about health, I think about energy. As far as I'm concerned, the amount of energy you have for your life is the true measure of how healthy you are. And there are three major sources of energy. Source number one is food. Source number two is air. And source number three is impressions. Now, I'll come back to that a little bit later, but let me just touch on it quickly just so I don't forget. Food is the food you put in your mouth, food and drink and so on. Air is the amount that you breathe, aerobic exercise, fully oxygenating your body. You know that the more you breathe and the better and the deeper you breathe, the more relaxed you are, the more fully oxygenated blood you have to your brain, the brighter and more alert you are, and so on. That's why people who exercise a lot, which we'll talk about soon, always have more energy than people who don't. But the third is impressions, and impressions are the way we interpret things to ourselves. So let's say you get cut off in traffic, and you say, well, just give me more time to listen to a Brian Tracy audio program. Then it doesn't bother you. If you get cut off in traffic, you get angry, it takes away your energy. All negative emotions, all anger, all frustration, all stress, all feelings of guilt or unworthiness, all feelings of disapproval, all negative feelings deplete our energies. They burn up our energies. One outburst of anger can burn up as much energy as 8 hours of work, according to some of the physiologists. So those are the three major sources of energy, and food can either energize you or tire you out, depending upon the foods you eat and when you eat the foods and the way that you mix the foods. Now, in 1984 in Los Angeles, they did a study of the diets of the athletes from more than 100 countries, and they found a remarkable consistency among the diets. Even though they came from Ethiopia and Britain and places in South America, all the diets had three things in common. These are the top performing athletes in the world, the highest, most energetic, the fittest, the trimmest people you could imagine. And number one was that they had a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. They ate a wide variety of foods. Some people eat a lot of green peppers, and some ate a lot of carrots and tomatoes, and some ate a lot of mushrooms and asparagus and so on. But they ate a wide variety. As a result, they got a wide variety of nutrients. The second thing that they found is that they ate lean source protein almost exclusively. Now, lean source protein is fish. Of course, that's the leanest source, but chicken is a lean source protein, especially chicken breast. beef, lean beef, like prime rib or sirloin, is a low-fat, high-quality form of protein. Soy is a good form of protein. Now, some people will say, well, wait a minute, what if you're a vegetarian? Again, I studied this subject for many years, and the conclusion that I've come to that most doctors agree with is that there are four basic blood types. There's even a book called Eat Right for Your Type, and the word four is the number. And there's four basic blood types. One blood type is amenable to a vegetarian diet. A person can eat a vegetarian diet with this blood type, and their blood chemistry, like their chemical factory of their body, is set up to turn those vegetables and a vegetarian diet into all the nutrients they need, especially all the amino acids. The other three quarters of the population cannot sustain a vegetarian diet without feeling weak, without their bones getting weak, without losing energy, without feeling tired, without their skin going sallow, and so on. So for people who are vegetarians, they believe this is a wonderful diet and they think everybody should take it. But the fact is that only one quarter of people really thrive on a vegetarian diet. So the Olympic diet was a variety of fruits and vegetables, lean source protein of all kinds, including some of them who ate soy protein and things like that. And the third factor was lots of water. Now here's an interesting point. There are foods that you can eat, like what we just talked about, fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, plus lean source proteins and water, and you can eat them all day, and you can eat them in any quantity, and you can't gain weight on them. The fact is that if you eat them, they satisfy your appetite fairly quickly, so you eat less of them. It's called the difference between under-eating and under-nourishment. Is really healthy, fit people under-eat. They eat smaller quantities and less of it, but they eat highly nourishing foods, so they get all the vitamins, minerals, proteins, amino acids, and what are called essential food factors in their diet. So you can eat these all you like. You can eat good foods all the time. You never gain weight. As a matter of fact, if you eat good foods all the time, the weight just falls off you. It's the other food. Now, 1935, 36, a method of eating became very popular called food combining. And the Diamonds wrote a book a few years ago called Fit for Life, where they talked about food combining. As it turns out, the Diamonds are pure vegetarians. So their whole idea of food combining was a little bit slanted because of that predisposition. But the food combining methodology is very interesting. What they said is that your body secretes both acids and alkalines to digest food. If you eat a protein, your body secretes acids in your stomach to break down the protein. If you eat an alkaline or a base, for instance, pasta, bread, potatoes, rice, any kind of alkaline, your body secretes alkaline to break it down. So what happens with most people is they eat meat and potatoes. Now, if you mix an acid and a base together, an acid and an alkaline, what happens is they neutralize each other. So a person eats steak and potatoes, and they get into the stomach, and the body neutralizes. Now, this is the reason why people feel kind of blousy, tired, drowsy, sleepy in the afternoon or after eating. This is what they say. You never go swimming until more than an hour after eating because you'll get cramps. Well, why is this? Well, because when you mix foods, when you don't combine your foods properly, when you mix the foods, they go into your stomach, and your stomach secretes acid and alkalines to break them down. But it doesn't work because they neutralize each other. So your body secretes more acids and alkalines and more acids and alkalines, and this food bubbles and churns and gurgles in your stomach, and all of your body, all the blood in your body rushes to your digestive system to try to break down this food before it starts moving through your small intestine. And what that does is it takes the blood away from your brain, which is what makes you drowsy. It takes the blood away from your muscles in your legs, which would give you cramps if you try to swim. So what's the solution? It's very simple, they say, and I tried this, by the way, and it's just dynamite. A lot of people are, you know, upset about it, and they think it's controversial, but they just simply eat proteins like meat only with fruits and vegetables, primarily with vegetables. You eat carbohydrates, for instance, like pastas, but you eat them only with vegetables, but you don't eat meat and carbohydrates together. You combine your foods properly. And the interesting thing is, when you start food combining and you eat more vegetables, you start to drop weight at a rapid rate. The weight just falls off. The other thing is that if you food combine, for instance, at lunchtime, Barry Sears has written a book called The Zone, one of the best-selling books on nutrition for many years, which is full of neat stuff. But one of the things he points out is that there are zone meals. A zone meal is a meal that is balanced, 40% protein, 30% carbohydrate, 30% fats. If you eat a zone meal and you eat complex carbohydrates, which are fruits and vegetables, then what will happen is afterwards you will have about 5 hours of steady, steady energy. As this food digests, turns into glucose, releases in a slow release into your bloodstream, you'll have 4 to 5 hours of high energy with no drowsiness. So what is the very best food? I have found over the years the very best lunch is a salad with either fish or chicken. My favorite, I have a chicken Caesar salad virtually all the time I'm traveling. I just order it in advance. But any kind of salad with fish or chicken, and no breads, no pastas, no Cokes, no anything, no desserts, just a chicken or fish salad will give you a high level of energy that will keep you alert and sharp and performing at your best all day, and it's perfectly consistent with all the work on food combining. So just a very important thought. If you eat meat and potatoes, then afterwards you feel drowsy, you feel tired, it takes away your energy, you want to go back to sleep. In the Latin countries, they used to have a siesta. They'd have a big meal full of proteins and carbohydrates, and then they go and sleep it off for 2 or 3 hours. So the rule is, don't mix meat and potatoes. Don't mix eggs and toast. You know, you can get up in the morning and you can have fruit juice and eggs, but if you eat a piece of toast on top of that, it makes you drowsy. So by the time you get to work, you need a cup of coffee to wake up. One of the main reasons that people drink coffee in the morning after breakfast and in the afternoon after lunch is because they're drowsy because they've eaten foods that are causing them to be all tired out. So eat only carbohydrates or pastas, if you like, with vegetables. We'll talk about pastas a little while later. Okay, the result is you'll have high energy, you'll feel light, you'll have no drowsiness, and you'll lose weight if you combine your foods properly. Now, the next point with regard to proper diet is to eliminate the three white poisons. Now, the three white poisons in our society are, number one, white salt. The rule is eliminate the putting of salt on anything for the rest of your career. Most people, as soon as they get food, they pour salt on it, and they don't even taste it. There's a story about Thomas Edison. When he was interviewing an engineer, he would take him for lunch to the company cafeteria, and when they served the lunch, he would just watch him. If the engineer put salt on the food before tasting it, he wouldn't hire him. He would say, thank you, this interview is over, and walk away. Because that meant that the person had no imagination and no creativity. They just simply behaved by habit. They didn't even think about what they were doing. So we eliminate white salt. Now, the rule today is that the average American needs no additional salt in their diet, but the average American consumes 20 extra pounds of salt every year. When you consume salt, the body has to do everything possible to balance out the sodium chloride molecule, which it does by attaching water to the sodium chloride molecule to neutralize it, which means that your body retains water. You notice when you eat salty foods, you get thirsty, so you drink lots of water, you keep drinking water. The body's saying, I need water to balance this salt out, and then the body holds on to the water, and you actually feel blousy and fat. Many people are carrying as much as 5 pounds of extra water, which is held in suspension in the cells as a result of too much salt. Now, another problem with salt is that salt on food has no nutrients. Sea salt, for example, has like 60 nutrients, 60 minerals in it. But normal salt, sodium chloride, has none. So when your body takes in the salt, it's reaching, it's striving for the nutrients, and it can't get any, so it wants more of the salty food, which is why you start off to eat a couple of potato chips, and pretty soon you're eating the whole thing. Your body's saying, more, more, where's the nutrients? Where's the nutrients? Your body's like a drowning man reaching out for nutrients. But when you're eating salty foods, there's no nutrients in the food. So eventually you fill up on salty foods. Then your body screams for water. You feel blousy and overfed. You feel lightheaded because there's no food value in it. And it has everything is wrong. So eating salts triggers the craving to continually eat more. Now, if you want to know how bad salt is, why is there so much salt in foods that are sold in the supermarkets? Well, some years ago, they found that the best way that you could stop food from rotting or decomposing once you manufactured it was to kill it before you put it on the shelf. And the two ways that you kill a food is with salt and with sugar. So you'll find that most of the foods, for example, Campbell's soup, if you look at a Campbell's soup can, you'll find that often the largest single ingredient next to water is salt. It sometimes has 4 or 5 tablespoons of salt. You'll find that almost all fast foods, non-sweetened fast foods, are loaded with salt. And the salt enables them to stay alive. And so when you eat these foods, what happens is you supersaturate your body with salt and you have this problem. So what is the solution? Stop eating foods that have salt in them. Do everything possible to avoid foods that have salt in them. Check the labels of everything that you eat. Don't eat high salty foods and don't put salt on your foods. By the way, if you just stop consuming salt for a week, you'll drop 3, 4, 5 pounds. It's absolutely astonishing. Salt is also very closely associated with high blood pressure, with hyperactivity, with irritation, with difficulty in sleeping, insomnia, constipation, and a whole lot of other things. So I hope I've discouraged you. The second white poison is white sugar. And anything that ends in the letters O-S-E is a white poison. It's sugar. Glucose, sucrose, dextrose. No matter what they say, anything that has sugar in it is bad for you. Now, in the Western world, the average person consumes between 120 and 200 pounds of sugar per annum. The average person needs no sugar per annum. They need no additional sugar. The average person gets all the sugar they need from the foods that they eat. Even if you eat vegetables, even if you eat breads, you'll find that in whole grain breads, for example, the breads have what is called complex carbohydrates. Complex carbohydrates are foods that are loaded with nutrients that have to be broken down by the body for you to get the food value out of them. When you drink white sugar has a molecular structure so that all it needs is one molecule of water per molecule of sucrose or dextrose or glucose, and it goes straight into the bloodstream. That's why if you take a sugar food, for instance, let us say you take a donut or a Coke or a candy bar because your energy level is low, what it does is it goes straight into the bloodstream and gives you what is called a sugar spike, and it gives you energy. And sometimes it's a very shallow form of energy, very much like throwing gasoline on a fire. Within an hour to 2 hours, however, something happens. When you have this sugar spike, your body goes into emergency stations and says, too much sugar, and you immediately start to secrete insulin. Your body starts to secrete insulin at a rapid rate to absorb that sugar and get it out of your system to get your body and your blood sugar back into balance. But what the body does is it secretes too much insulin, which over-absorbs the sugar, which causes you to go into an energy dip and even a depression. At the end of the day, you can feel tired, and you know what? You'll start to feel like a drink. You said, you know, I need a drink. God, I'm tired. I need a drink. At the end of the day, I'm just going to go out and have a drink, have a couple of drinks. What is in a drink? Any kind of a drink has alcohol and sugar, which goes straight into the bloodstream, which gives you that charge again. That's why when you drink after the end of the day, you get a surge, which picks you up for an hour or two, and then you start to feel depressed. Sometimes you get angry. Sometimes you get irritable and lots of other negative things. So the key is to avoid taking any extra sugar at all. If you're hungry in the middle of the day, take fruit. If you're hungry, you eat high-quality breads. If you're hungry, sometimes fruit juice, good quality fruit juice without extra added sugar, or plain yogurt. Anything that is highly nutritional will immediately take away your appetite, but you'll have no sugar spike rising up and crashing. So the rule is, if you want to have a proper diet and be fit and trim for life, eliminate all white sugar products. Eliminate all soft drinks. The average can of Coke has 8 tablespoons of sugar in it. 8 tablespoons of sugar that cause your system to go crazy. They throw in a whole bunch of caffeine so that you'll get a mental spike that will sort of tide you over once the sugar spike is gone and so on, but this is not good for you. Eliminate candy, eliminate donuts, eliminate cake, eliminate chocolate. And here's an interesting point. If you eat high-quality foods, like we've talked about, lean source proteins, fruits and vegetables, lots of water, and you eliminate desserts, you'll start dropping weight at the rate of 1 to 2 pounds a day. Just eliminating desserts will cause you to get your weight back under control. Here's an interesting point. There is deep down within you a desire for you to be fit and trim. There is a stabilizing influence. If you will just stop doing to your body what you're doing it, your body will start to stabilize back to the right weight in a very short period of time. Now, the third white poison is white flour products. Any white flour products includes breads, pasta, rolls, bagels, muffin, even rice, actually, which is white, is considered little globules of sugar. It's even bad for you. Now, the reason for white flour products being bad is to go back to the last century or 2 centuries ago when they first started grinding wheat into flour to make bread with. They used raw grinding equipment, and the wheat was ground up, and the whole wheat kernel ground up went into the bread. In Germany, they still have this. They call it Vollkornbrot, which is full kernel bread, and it's a very densely nutritious food, full of vitamins and minerals and everything else. Well, in England, what happened is the upper class, the royalty, the aristocracy, began to ask for bread that looked different from the bread that the working people were eating. So what they did is they began to mill the bread and to clean it out and take out all the nutrients until they had white flour, just all the nutrients were removed, and then they bleached it to make it even whiter. Well, when they bleached it, they killed it dead. All the nutrients in white flour products have been removed. White flour products are essentially inert. They are dead foods. Then the government stepped in and said, look, this is a dead food. You're going to have to re-enrich these vitamins. So they used the word enrich. And you know what enrich is? They take a hose of vitamin mineral substance, usually created in factories, and they hose the flour before they bake it into bread at 700 degrees. Now, all these vitamins and nutrients are all killed at about 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So what happens is you have nutrients that have been killed on bread that is dead. And then you take it and you eat this. Your body is not even suited to digest the wheat glutens that are in bread. So the food goes into your system. Your system goes to work to try to digest it along with the other things you've eaten with it. You start to feel drowsy, and then this whole mass moves into your intestine and starts to work its way through, causing you to be drowsy, causing you to be constipated, and so on. So your job is just to stop eating white flour products. So now what we've done is we stopped eating white salt, white sugar, white flour. I had a young guy write to me, He wrote to me recently. He said he'd been listening to my materials for several years. He'd gone from being a struggling salesman to being worth more than $1 million. He was the top salesman in his company, but he had one problem. The problem was he was 22 pounds overweight, and he could never get the weight off, no matter what exercise, no matter what diet. Then one day on one of my programs, he heard about the three white poisons, and he was disciplined enough, and this is very important, he was disciplined enough to say, all right, I'm going to eliminate the three white poisons from my life, and he did. He lost the 22 pounds, and it never came back. He said he felt fabulous. He had more energy. He looked good. He had to buy all new clothes. It totally changed his self-image with regard to women. He's only in his early 30s. And he said it changed his life by eliminating the three white poisons. Every time I teach people this, and they come back to me 90 days later at my coaching program, not every time, some of them come back 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds light. You walk in and you don't even recognize them. They're wearing clothes that don't even fit them anymore. They said, I just eliminated the three white poisons. The problem with the three white poisons, by the way, is they all taste so good, and the things combined with them taste good, so it's something we have to get over. Now, the next part of proper diet is timing. And Adele Davis once said, the key to proper nutrition is to eat breakfast like a king, eat lunch like a prince, and eat dinner like a pauper. And what we found is if you eat a really high-quality, high-nutrient breakfast, a medium-quality or medium-nutrient lunch, and a very light dinner, you'll just drop weight. In fact, there was an article in USA Today just this week of this fellow who came up with his diet, and he called it the Northwest Diet, and it was a good breakfast, a good lunch, and a light dinner. He said he lost something like 25 pounds in a matter of 6 months, 40 pounds in 6 months, 40 pounds in 6 months. He said with no extra effort at all. Another thing he did, which I'll come to in a second, has to do with timing, is he did not eat after 7:30 in the evening. So at the end of the day, he would eat something fairly light, vegetables with a little protein, and then had at least a three-hour space between when he ate and when he went to bed. And that's something for you to incorporate into your lifestyle. Always keep 3 hours between when you eat and when you go to bed. 4 hours is better. So here's what they have found. You need about 2,000 calories per day in order to be fit and trim for life. And when you eat those calories largely determines your physical condition. If you eat 80% of your calories between breakfast and lunch, and only the other 20% for dinner, you'll lose weight. If you eat, as most people do, a light breakfast, a light lunch, and a heavy dinner, if you eat 80% of your calories after 2 p.m. in the afternoon, you'll actually gain weight on a steady basis with the same number of calories. So always think in terms of eating a good breakfast, a medium lunch, a light dinner. And if you can eat 80% of your calories before 2 p.m. in the afternoon, you will lose weight. And again, 2,000 calories is all you need. One or two other quick points with regard to diet is to take smaller portions of better foods. Take smaller portions of better foods. Use a smaller plate when you eat. It's absolutely amazing. Remember we were told when we were young, you got to clean your plate? Well, good. Then use a smaller plate and put less on it. And remember this, as I tell my wife, because we go through this, we say, geez, what are we going to do? I haven't finished my dinner. I say, honey, we're not poor anymore. We don't have to eat it all. You're not poor anymore. When you were young, maybe you needed to, but today you don't have to eat it all. You can leave it. If you finished eating and you're not hungry anymore, just leave it. So the rule is just stop eating when you're no longer hungry. Just stop, push it away, and then take the food away. If the food is no longer in front of you, your appetite stops. If the food is sitting there, it's very dangerous. You start to pick at it, and then you start to eat not for nutrition, but for pleasure. And all of our health problems come from eating for pleasure and not nutrition. So how do you develop a new habit of any kind? And what we're talking about throughout here is developing habits of eating and living properly. Here's the first rule. Number one point is select one eating habit that you want to develop. This gentleman selected the three white poisons, and that's all he focused on. But the interesting thing is if you pick one habit that you want to develop by repeating over and over again, it will start you to improve in every other area. Start immediately. Once you decide you're going to do it, don't say I'm going to do it after Christmas or after the weekend or next week. Once you decide that it's a good habit to develop, begin immediately that minute. Push the food away at that time if necessary. Never allow an exception. That's the next key to developing a habit. Don't ever allow yourself off the hook. Keep your feet to the fire. Discipline yourself not to cut yourself any slack. Tell others. Tell other people, I'm no longer going to eat white poisons. I am no longer going to eat meat and potatoes. In other words, tell other people this is a habit you're going to develop, because if you know they're watching you, you're much more likely to keep your word. Persist for at least 21 days. Researchers and psychologists say it takes about 21 days to develop a new habit. If you can discipline yourself to do it for 21 days, it'll become so automatic that you'll very seldom slip back into it. Now, here's another point. Take it one day at a time. Whatever health habit you decide to develop as a result of the things we're talking about here, take it one day at a time. Don't try to do it for a year. Just say, just for today, I'm not going to eat any of these particular products. Just for today, I'm going to do this. Just for today, I'm not going to do that. And you can say, just for today, maybe tomorrow I'll cut myself some slack, but just for today, I'm not going to do it. You see, you can do anything one day at a time. If you think of dieting rigorously for a year, it's so overwhelming you won't even do it for a day. But if you think about doing it for a day, well, for one day you could do it. And the last point with regard to developing a habit is to be gentle on yourself. If you slip, as you will from time to time, just pick yourself up and start again. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Okay, so the first key to being fit and trim for life, which is the longest and the most important, is proper diet. The second is proper weight. And the rule is that slightly under your ideal weight is best. There's lots of reasons for that. The main reason is you will feel great. You will look great. And there's one rule for being fit and trim for life, and it consists of five words. And there's no other way to define it, and there's no way to get around it. And the rule is, eat less and exercise more. Five words, eat less and exercise more. There is no other way to lose weight than to reduce the number of calories you're taking in relative to the number of calories you're burning up. So therefore, if you gradually reduce your caloric intake and eat better foods, and gradually increase the amount of exercise you do, which we'll talk about in a second, your weight will fall off. And because you do it gradually, it'll stay off forever. So the rule is under-eating without undernourishment. In other words, you eat less food, but you eat higher quality foods. You eat more nutritious foods. The rule is that your body only needs two handfuls of food to be satisfied. Your stomach can only take two handfuls of food. So if you cup your hand, just imagine a ball in your hand. If you're big, you probably have a big hand. If you're small, you have a small hand. But imagine a ball cupped in your hand, and imagine two balls. That's all the food that you need to satisfy your appetite completely. Just make sure that those are high-quality foods, or two high-quality handfuls. Eat less food but higher quality. Eat more proteins, eat more fruits, and eat more vegetables. Now, here's the starting point. Determine your ideal weight. Imagine you could wave a magic wand and pick your ideal weight, your perfect weight. This is my perfect weight. I love this weight. Well, write down the number. Second of all, determine your current weight. How much do you weigh today? And work it out. And then, number three, determine the date at which you'll reach your goal of your perfect weight. What will be your date? Now, be realistic. If you've taken a long time to gain weight, don't expect to lose it all in 30 days. Remember, easy come, easy go. Also, easy go, easy come again. So if you lose weight fast, you'll put it back on. If you lose weight slowly over a period of time, you'll recondition yourself with brand new habits that will enable you to achieve it. So write down the sacrifices and the changes you're going to have to make to get there. What are the prices you're going to have to pay? What are you going to have to do more of or less of? What are you going to have to start or stop? Then discipline yourself to pay the price. Discipline yourself to fulfill those sacrifices. I mentioned I would give you a diet that would enable you to lose a pound a day. I've used it on occasion. Other people have used it on occasion. It was developed by a nutritionist some years ago. It's so powerful. It's absolutely unbelievable. It's called the Lemonade Diet. Now, the lemonade diet is very simple. You take 1 quart of warm water and you put 1 level tablespoon of sea salt in it. This is the exact consistency of your blood, and sea salt is loaded with nutrients. With that 1 quart of water, you drink the entire quart. Does it taste great? No, but it doesn't taste that bad. Once you've consumed it, you wait an hour, and in 1 hour, your system will clean out from stem to stern. You will have one of the cleanest systems, like you just put, you know, all your dishes through a high-powered dishwasher. Your system will be as clean as a whistle. That's the beginning of the lemonade diet. Now, for the next 7 days, what you do is you only have lemonade. And the lemonade you have is you take a tall glass, 12 ounces of water. You put in the juice of 2 freshly squeezed lemons. You cut the lemons in half and you squeeze them into the water. You put in 2 tablespoons of maple syrup. There's something about the combination of the lemons, which is full of vitamins, and the maple syrup, pure maple syrup, which is also full of vitamins and minerals, plus 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. So if you got that, 12 ounces of water, the juice from 2 squeezed lemons, 2 tablespoons of pure maple syrup, and 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, and then you mix it up and you drink it. And what this does is it kills your appetite. And throughout the day, the first day especially, whenever you feel hungry, mix up the drink. I used to take a big thermos of it with me to work. Just mix up this drink and take it, and it kills your appetite. The first day, you'll drink about 8 glasses. The second day, 6 or 7 glasses. The next day, 5 or 6, and then 4 or 5. And then by the 4th or 5th day, you'll be drinking about 3 of these glasses per day, and you'll have no appetite at all. Meanwhile, you'll be losing 1 pound to 2 pounds a day. Each night, you take 2 mugs of laxative tea. You can buy it in any health food store. You just mix it up in a teapot and drink it and take the laxative tea. Each morning when you get up, your system will dump. Excuse the expression. It'll clean out because the average body today has 5 to 15 pounds of junk stuck in it. It's almost like you're taking a physical type of Roto-Rooter. Each morning when you get up, even though you've had no food 3 or 4 or 5 days, you'll be absolutely amazed at the amount of junk that is still coming out of your system, and every day you'll lose a pound. So if you go on this for 1 week, 7 days, you'll lose a minimum of 7 pounds. Some people have gone on it for 2 and 3 weeks and lost 14, 21. Some people have gone on it for a month and lose 30 pounds. My recommendation is go on it for a week and then gradually come off with soup and steamed vegetables and gradually get back onto a new diet. So if you want a real powerful, healthy way to lose 7 pounds quickly and start you off on a new health regimen, try the lemonade diet. Because it works like a darn, and it works for everybody. It's very healthy. The next part with regard to dieting, proper weight, is to turn off your apostat. Every single person has what is called an apostat, which is like a thermostat that determines the temperature in a room. If the thermostat goes too high, the thermostat clicks on and the air conditioning begins. If it goes too low, it clicks on and the heating begins. Well, you have an apostat on your appetite. This apostat tells you when you're hungry, but it also tells you when you're not hungry. The apostat has a 20-minute lag, which means that if you're really hungry, if you eat something, it takes 20 minutes for it to register that you now have food in your stomach, you're not hungry. And what happens with most people is they start eating, and they start eating, and they get into eating, and the apostat turns off, and they keep going right past it. They're no longer hungry. They just keep going right past it. Even worse, by the way, and it's not worse, but if you drink wine with a meal, the wine will also distract you from the fact that you're no longer hungry. After 20 minutes, your apostat stops, and you're not hungry, and now you're only eating for pleasure. So one of the things that you can do, for example, when you come home in the evening, if you eat an apple or a piece of fruit or a glass of fruit juice, it'll stop your apostat for 15, 20 minutes. If you sit down and you eat a salad or a bowl of soup, it kills your apostat. So if you start eating a meal slowly, so you eat your first course and drag it over 20 minutes, at 20 minutes your appetite clicks off like a light switch. Then you're no longer eating for food, you're only eating for pleasure. So one of the things that I have found that's very helpful, if you're going out for dinner, for example, is instead of having a full dinner, because it's now the evening, have 2 hors d'oeuvres, just 2 hors d'oeuvres. Have a salad and maybe an hors d'oeuvre, because by the time you get to the hors d'oeuvre after the salad, you'll no longer be hungry. You'll no longer be eating because the food is there because you've got to clean your plate. You'll no longer be hungry. The dinner will cost you half as much. You'll get up from the table feeling great. You'll be light. You'll sleep much, much better. So everything works well. So key number three, all right? Key number three in being fit and trim forever is proper vitamin and mineral supplements. The fact is that today most foods are overprocessed, They're raised on depleted soil. They no longer contain the vitamins and minerals you need. Sometimes people say, well, if you get a balanced diet, you get all the vitamins and minerals you require. But nutritionists have calculated that you would have to eat 20 pounds of food, fruits, vegetables, and other foods each day in order to get all the nutrients you need. And there's nobody that can do that. So take a top-quality vitamin and mineral supplement. I'm not going to give you my own recommendations because everybody has their own ideas, but I've been taking top-quality vitamin and mineral supplements for years, and I am never sick. I always have energy. I fly 200 days a year. I work sometimes 12, 14 hours a day. I never get sick. I never get colds. I never get flus. An enormous amount of it is because I take these vitamins. So ask around. Ask people, what's the best vitamin and mineral you can get, and then take it religiously. Now, here's another point, is if you take vitamins and minerals regularly, and they call them food supplements, in other words, you take them with your meals, is they satisfy your body's craving for all those little nutrients. And if you don't take them on a regular basis, your body is still hungry. It's still reaching out. It's still craving for food because it's not getting the total number of vitamins and minerals that it requires. So therefore, when you take regular food and mineral supplements, you actually feel better, you have more energy, and you eat less because you're not as hungry as you would be normally. Now, here's another important point that's helped me a lot, is I take omega-3 fish oil tablets. There's all kinds available of varying levels of quality. It's very hard to get a bad one. Any nutritional store will sell them to you, and lots of other MLM companies have them. This last year, I got a religion. I started taking them every single day. I was supposed to take them twice a day. I took them once a day. My cholesterol dropped from 200 to 170. My doctor said, good grief, what on earth are you doing? I said, well, I'm just, the only thing I can think of is I'm taking these fish oil tablets regularly every single day. He said, well, your cholesterol just dropped 30 points. Now, that is quite phenomenal. So I really recommend that to you. And one last point is when you're working hard, when you're working long days, when you're under stress for any reason, take extra vitamins and minerals. Take extra food supplements. Remember, your body's like a machine. It needs lots of really, really good fuel. And if you're using it really hard, put in more and put in better fuel. Now, key number four to being fit and trim for life is proper hydration. Now, I talked about this a little while ago when we talked about Olympic athletes. Proper hydration means that you drink lots of water. There's lots of people out there who are actually fanatics on water. They believe that water can cure anything. 70% of your body is water. 90% of the globe is water. That water has miraculous effects. And to a greater or lesser degree, it does. So you need 2 full quarts a day going through a normal day just to replenish the amount of water your body is burning up in exercise, breathing, digestion, muscular movement, and so on. You need 8 large glasses of water each day just to stay even. Now, how do you know if you're not getting enough water? Well, you actually start to feel tired. When you don't have enough water, you become dehydrated. When you become dehydrated, you become tired. When you become a little tired, you don't concentrate that well. You don't pay attention that well. It even affects your memory in a negative way. So what happens if you drink lots of water? Well, water washes out toxins, salts, and impurities. Drinking the water is sort of like hosing off your sidewalk. The more water you take, it aids your digestion, it curbs your appetite, gives you energy, and it keeps washing away all this negative stuff. How can you tell if you're getting enough water? Very simple, is look at your urine. If you're getting lots of water, your urine will be almost pure. It'll have a very, very slight yellow tinge to it. If you're not getting enough water, your urine will become yellow, and if you're really dehydrated, it will become dark yellow, and it can even become dark, dark yellow. So whenever you can see the color of your urine, excuse the discussion, whenever you can see the color of your urine, it means that you need water. It means that you need several glasses of water. So just gorge, just put the water in. And the rule is this, you can't drink too much water. If you drink too much water, you know it'll just fall off your body like water off a duck's back. Now, key number five, if you want to be fit and trim for life, is to get proper rest. Here's a great challenge today, is when we're young, we have boundless energy. When we get into our 20s, we have the highest energy of our lives. And so we get into stuff, and we take on stuff, and we expand our schedule like an accordion, and we try to do too many things. And what happens is we start to get tired, and we don't even know it. We start to burn the candle at both ends. In 1900, the average adult in the Western world was sleeping about 9 hours and 15 minutes a day. By the year 2000, it was down to about 6.5 hours. So How can you tell if you're getting enough rest? Here's a real simple test. Sometimes I ask my audiences, I say, how many people here woke up this morning and the first thing you thought about was when you could go back to sleep again tonight? And it's amazing how many people raised their hands. As they got out of bed and they say, oh my God. And they're thinking, what time can I go to bed this morning? Tonight, I'm going to go to bed early. You know, they make that resolution. So you can always tell if you wake up in the morning fully rested, do you know what it is? You can't sleep anymore. You reach the point where your eyes open up, your heart rate picks up, sort of like a gentle pulse increase, and you just can't sleep anymore, even if you want to. So 60% or more of Americans today are suffering sleep deprivation. Now, sleep deprivation is something that creeps up on you. You don't really notice it. You cut your night short, you sleep 6 or 7 hours. Worse, you eat too late, or you go to bed too late, you watch something stimulating on television, then you toss and turn, so you don't get good sleep. If you get really good sleep, by the way, if you sleep really deeply, you can get by on 6 or 7 hours. But if your sleep is tempestuous, if you're up and down and your nerves jump and you have to get up and go to the bathroom and you toss and turn, usually that happens because you ate too much, you ate the wrong foods, you're having a chemical reaction, you saw something stimulating on television, and so on. So what happens is people start to function in a form of fog, is they walk around kind of foggy. They're there, and you see them, and they function, but they're not sharp, and they're not alert. Sometimes they forget things. Sometimes they miss appointments. Sometimes they don't catch things when people say things to them. They're not as creative as they were before. So in our advanced coaching programs, we always teach people to get 8 hours sleep. Expand your night. Get to an hour, extra hour of sleep. Make a decision to start shutting down by 9 o'clock. The last hour of the day should not be something where you're working or doing something intense. You should start to sort of shut down. Women lock down the house. Men just kind of sort of shut down their minds. And aim to be in bed by 10 o'clock. Aim to sleep 8 hours from 10 to 6 p.m. I had a gentleman in my coaching program recently. He said, you know, that was the most phenomenal thing. He had been working busy for several years. He started sleeping 8 hours a day, and he felt like he had woken up from a dream. He said he woke up and he could see things clearly. He had more energy. His personality was different. He had no idea how tired he was, and said it took him several weeks of sleeping 8 hours a night before he was back to his peak once more. It was very important. So turn off the television early. Aim to be in bed by 10 o'clock. There's nothing on television you need to see. Don't watch Jay Leno or Letterman or movies or anything else. And in the last 3 or 4 hours before you go to sleep, don't eat anything. Just eat light between 6 and 7:30, and don't eat anything, and you'll sleep deeply. You'll wake up fresh. You wake up rested. You wake up relaxed. Then when you're fully rested, you need less coffee. You eat less food. You have more energy. You feel like exercising. You eat more nutritious foods. You don't need a sugar jolt or anything else. So all of your dieting begins to improve as well. And another thing that you need to do is you need to take more time off. This is one of the most important things in terms of proper rest. Your goal and our goal in our programs is for people to take 120 to 150 days off each year. What does that work out to? It works out to about one-third of the year. Now, how can you take 120 to 150 days off a year and still function? Well, my discovery is that you can take up to 3 months off a year and you'll double and triple your income, because during the working time, you'll be so much sharper, so much more alert, so much more productive, so much more creative. It'll actually amaze you. And every person I've ever encouraged to increase their time off to 150 days has doubled and tripled their income. It's phenomenal. So what do? You take off every weekend. 52 weekends times 2 days, that's 104 days. Take off all official holidays. In the U.S., there's 6 official holidays. So you add that to the 104, you've got 110 days. And then you take off 8 weeks during the year, 4 or 5 weeks in summertime, 2 or 3 weeks at Christmas, a week at Thanksgiving, a week at spring break or Easter. There's your 8 weeks. So you've now got 150 days off each year. Take 3-day weekends with your spouse every 2 or 3 months. Book a hotel at a distant place and just go with your spouse. Have at least 2 nights away when you go on a weekend with your spouse. It takes you 2 nights to completely decompress. And just take the time to walk, relax, go for dinner, talk. It's the most wonderful thing you can imagine is just to get away. And don't think of all the reasons why you can't. Think of all the reasons why you can. Plan your vacations for the year in January. When January comes, set your vacations for the whole year. And here's the key. Book the vacations and pay for them in advance, non-refundable. you will never miss a non-refundable vacation. If you plan on taking the time off, but you don't book it, or you book it and you can get out of it, you'll always find a reason not to. So what you do is you make non-refundable bookings. You send them the check. You pay for it. You buy a restricted, reserved excursion fare on the airline so you can't get out of it. And you'll always take those vacations. And you'll be so happy you did afterwards. You'll be so happy. The more rested you are, the better you feel. The more rested you are, the more productive you are. The more rested you are, the less you eat. The more rested you are, the more you feel like exercising, which makes you feel terrific about yourself. And that brings us to key number 6, which is proper exercise. Remember the rule, eat less and exercise more. Regular exercise is essential if you want to be fit and trim for life. If you want to look and feel your best, if you want to live a long life, every single study that's coming out says that there is a correlation between regular exercise and long, healthy, happy life. Harvard University this year just completed some studies that say there's a direct relationship between regular and daily exercise and long life. There's a 50% less chance of Alzheimer's disease or any of the senility diseases if you exercise half an hour a day. Not only that, people who exercise, even in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, are more alert, they're sharper, they're quicker, they're more creative, and they're much happier. Not only that, they have stronger bones, they have stronger muscles, and so on. So set a goal to exercise 200 minutes per week. Make an appointment with yourself each day to exercise for half an hour. Just like an appointment with your boss or an important client, write it down, I exercise 30 minutes every day. Set it aside. Better yet, get a personal trainer and pay them in advance. Sign up for a fitness class and pay in advance. So if you miss it, you've lost your money. The most amazing thing is that if you pay in advance, boy, you will be there and you will be so happy that you are. Yoga is a wonderful thing that's becoming very popular because it enables you to exercise all of your muscles. And in the process of yoga, you actually stimulate muscles, glands, endocrines that curb your appetite. So everybody who does yoga seems to eat less, be thinner, fitter, be more stretched out, sleep better at night, drink more water, eat better foods, and so on. So yoga is a wonderful thing if you learn how to do it and then practice it 30 minutes a day. Get a trainer, engage in regular exercise. Here's what we have found, by the way. Bill Phillips, the expert on Body for Life, says that the only way that you can break out of bad eating habits, many of which are addictive and habitual, is by regular exercise. Regular exercise, especially aerobic exercise, seems to trigger you out of those bad habits. If instead of getting up in the morning and drinking coffee and eating junk, you get up in the morning and exercise on an exercise machine for 30 or 60 minutes, you will have no desire afterwards to eat crummy foods. And the more you exercise, the more, like a precious racehorse, the more sensitive you are to the foods that you put into your body. You're going to say, hey, I'm not going to break my back doing this exercise and then fill my body full of junk. So the one tends to reinforce the other. People who exercise on a regular basis always are pumping their brains full of highly oxygenated blood, which means we found that people who engage in aerobic exercises are smarter and they're more creative. They're sharper and they're more alert than people who don't. If you get up in the morning and exercise for 30 or 60 minutes and something brisk that keeps your heart pounding, keeps you racing, all day long you'll be sharper. Here's another thing. All day long your body will continue to burn calories. Morning exercise is one of the most fabulous things you can do for yourself and for the rest of your life. Not only that, when you exercise regularly, you have higher self-esteem, higher levels of self-confidence. You're happier and you're more alert. You feel better about yourself. Now, the keys to exercise, by the way, there's 5 major aerobic exercises. The best of all is just walking. If you walk 30 minutes or more each day, 6 or 7 days a week, you'll be one of the fittest people in our society. Not only that, you'll feel happy. You'll have endorphins coursing through your brain. You'll have a sense of well-being. You'll be more cheerful. You'll be more positive. People will think you've been out smoking something. The other is cycling. Life cycling, bicycling is a wonderful exercise. Cross-country skiing is a wonderful exercise. Jogging, running just lightly is a wonderful exercise, and so is swimming. So any of those exercises done 30 minutes or more, 6 or 7 times a week, will make you one of the fittest and the healthiest and most alert people in your society. Number 7, in terms of the keys to long health, is proper attitude. A positive mental attitude is essential to a long, happy life. The number one quality of a positive mental attitude is optimism. And the way that you become an optimist, a purely positive person towards yourself and your life is, first of all, think and talk all the time about what you want and how to get it. Pessimists think about what they don't want and who's to blame, but positive people think about what they want and how to get it. Number two is look for the good in everything that happens to you. If you look for something good in any setback or difficulty, you'll always find it, and while you're looking for it, you'll be an optimist. Number three, seek the valuable lesson in every setback or difficulty. Whenever you have a temporary failure, say, what can I learn from this? And while you're learning, you'll be optimistic, and you'll always find the lesson. Number four is be solution-oriented rather than problem-oriented. Think in terms of what you can do to solve a problem, not the problem itself. Instead of thinking about what happened and what went wrong and who's to blame, you think, okay, what can I do now? What's my next action? What's the solution? Number five, feed your mind with positive materials. Listen to material like this. Read positive books. Attend positive courses. Feed your mind like you would feed your body with proper nutrition. Feed your mind with positive information. Number six, to be an optimist, get around the right people. Associate with winners. Associate with positive people. People who are upbeat and cheerful and who look for the good in every situation. And finally, number seven, to be an optimist, be action-oriented. Get busy. Get going. Get moving. People who are in action are too busy to think about their problems and difficulties. They're too busy making progress to make excuses. Remember, 85% of your illness in life today is psychosomatic. That's where psycho, the mind, makes soma, the body, sick. 85% of illness, sometimes 90%, is caused by what we call stinking thinking. It's caused by negative emotions. And the roots of all negative emotions, including the negative emotions that hold us back and that even start us into bad health habits, is blame. The root of negative emotions is blame. And so as soon as you stop blaming other people, your negative emotions start going away. As soon as you accept responsibility and focus on the solution rather than who's to blame, your life changes. So the key to happiness with regard to blame is forgiveness. I spoke to a woman in my seminar yesterday who said that the transforming experience of her life was to listen to my program, Psychology of Achievement, and learn about forgiveness. She said, I remember you said on that program, you're locked in place until you forgive someone who's hurt you. And she said, I had been locked for 10 years, and when I let the person go, I was free, and my whole life transformed. She said, I'm financially independent now. I'm worth more than $1 million. I've got four businesses. She said, she's fit, she's happy, she's healthy, she's well married. She said that forgiveness saved my life. So if there's somebody in your life you need to forgive, get on with it. The best way to remain an optimist is to set clear written goals, make plans to accomplish them, and work on them every day. So let me summarize quickly. To be fit for life, number one is proper diet. Eat the right foods and make a habit of eating only good foods for you. Treat yourself like a million-dollar racehorse or even more. Proper weight. Determine the very best weight for you, set it as a goal, make a plan, and then gradually get down to that weight and then stay there for the rest of your life. Number three is proper vitamin and mineral supplements. Proper vitamin and mineral supplements will combine to help you to gain your proper weight, to have high levels of health and energy, and to satisfy all your nutritional requirements. Number four is proper hydration. Drink lots of water. Keep your body flooded with water. It'll make you healthy, happy, and will wash away all the impurities and toxins that tire you out. Number five is proper rest. And, of course, proper relaxation. Is rest regularly. Get 8 hours of sleep a night. Take regular vacations. Treat yourself like you've only got a year to live. Treat yourself as though this were your last year on Earth. And be really good to yourself. Remember, there's nothing so important that it won't wait. Number six, proper exercise. Exercise 200 minutes a week. My goal is 300 minutes a week. But if you exercise 30 minutes a day, 200 minutes a week, you'll be one of the healthiest, fittest, highest energy, slimmest, trimmest, and most attractive people in your society. And finally, number seven, positive attitude. Be a positive person. Look for the good in every person and every experience. Think about your goals. Focus on solutions. Think about where you're going rather than where you're coming from. Make a decision today to develop the new habits that you'll need to make you fit for life. Remember, the key to success is to do what you resolve to do. Do what you resolve to do. What is the road to hell paved with? That's right, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. The number one obstacle to success in becoming fit for life is good intentions that we don't follow through on. So accept responsibility for your life, set clear goals, and do something every day until you get fit and trim, and then maintain that fitness and trimness for the rest of your life.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.